You're listening to the Getting Social Podcast, a Keep It Real type podcast where we discuss entrepreneurship, marketing, and all kinds of social topics. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Getting Social Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Balakard, and this is episode number 28. The very reason I started this podcast was to interview people like today's guest. Not only is his story inspiring, but his accomplishments so far and his mission for the future are to be applauded. I'm honored and thrilled to introduce Jean-Paul Laurent, an award-winning social entrepreneur, published author, keynote speaker, devoted humanitarian, TEDx lead organizer, and one of the leading global oral health experts of his generation. From being a troublemaker expelled from school in Haiti twice, to moving to the U.S. to further his education, to being coined the mayor of Smile, which eventually ended up blessing the bags of Lay's potato chips everywhere, Jean-Paul's story is nothing short of extraordinary. He is described as a visionary leader and unshakable optimist. He has devoted his entire professional life to leveraging capitalism and philanthropy. He started an impactful nonprofit organization in 2014 called Unspoken Smiles, promoting both long-term oral health and economic security in the world's most disadvantaged regions. There is more. Jean-Paul has received the nation's most prestigious award for volunteer service in 2016, the President's Volunteer Service Award bestowed by the Office of the Presidency under President Barack Obama. Without further ado, it's time to get social. All right, Jean-Paul. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for accepting my invitation to come on the Getting Social podcast. I know you're actually in Costa Rica right now and you're constantly on the move, so that makes me appreciate it even more. It's been a while since we've been following each other. I've personally taken a closer look as to what you've been doing and how you've been evolving, and it's a great pleasure to see that, and I congratulate you for that. And I don't know if you've listened to some of my episodes, but if you did, you'll know that I really love stories, and I'm very curious as to what your story is in terms of Jean-Paul Laurent, the kid growing up, and to becoming Jean-Paul Laurent, the mayor of Smile. So if you will, the floor is yours, and tell us your story.
Well, Jeff, first of all, thank you for inviting me in your show. And anytime I get a chance to connect with my fellow Asian people, and I love doing it, you know, because we are very few of us, you know, in the world that are doing an incredible thing. Mm-hmm. And when we get to connect with each other, and it's a great pleasure to do that. So first, I'm very thankful for the invitation to be on your show. And thanks also to the listeners of your show, because today they'll get to learn more about me and what I do to represent the Haitian flag across the world. Well, basically, I grew up in Haiti. So I grew up in a Seventh-day Adventist family. Uh-huh. My mom was Seventh-day Adventist, and I went to Catholic school in Jamaica, where I get my first year of schools. And it's from that moment, it was already a challenge because, as you know, the Jamaica is a Catholic school and you had to go to church on Sunday. Huh. And me having my mom as a Seventh-day Adventist, we go to church on Saturday. So I ended up, for the most part of my life, being able to see both worlds, you know,
wow,
as a Christian Seventh-day Adventist, solely because my dad strongly believed in the education that was given by those schools. So we had no choice. So even though inside the family there was like so many things that happened, but my mom made the compromise just because they both wanted us to have the best of education. So mm-hmm. The same thing happened when I got transferred to College Canada Haïtien. And they're very strict, you know, when it comes to attending Sunday church. So that's one of the most interesting things that happened to me in Haiti growing up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I transferred to Canada, because Jamaica was an all-boys school, so it was like a little bit different environment when I transferred to Canada. And well, it was a little bit mixed. We didn't have that many women there, but it was like there were a few mixed women in the school. And when I started there, because of the environment, I started acting up, you know, because I was like mostly a people pleaser. Just want to make people happy, make them smile all the time, and also impress the girls in my class and school. So I ended up overdoing it and ended up being expelled from the school. So I got some warnings from the first year, and then I didn't listen. The second year, I didn't listen also. So I got expelled from the school, which was like a wake-up moment for me in my life. It was like three major moments in my life that completely shaped me into who I am today. One of them was, the first one, was being expelled from Canada, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it was at the beginning of the year, also in September. So my dad already purchased uniforms, books, and all those expenses that was already put towards the school. And then only for me to be expelled from that school, it was like a big blow. And then my dad ended up, like, from the same day that we got the news that the fracasse will not accept me, after even my dad came down to talk to him. So he was walking to me to try to find school, because he was already in the middle of the year, academic year. So everything was already open. No other school, no other prestigious school wanted to take me. Like, we went to Gerard Gould or the other school nearby, CAC. And so it was a trouble. So, like, the only options was, like, to send me to Lycée, which, you know, I ended up accepting because it was my fault. But my dad still kept pushing, and through a connection with my cousin, I ended up getting accepted to Collège La Source, because my mom was Seventh-day Adventist. She went and spoke to, it was like a Seventh-day Adventist school, and she went and spoke to the school principal at that time, and they agreed to bring me in because we were from the same church. So that's why I was able to save the year. And then the problem is the other people that got kicked out from Canada the same time as me ended up going to the same school, because it was the only school that would accept us. So going there, it wasn't like a school that was new to me. I ended up having like four or five people from Canada that were kicked out as well.
so you guys got the clan back together.
We got the clan back together and started acting up again, only to be kicked out again the same year.
No way.
Yes. So that was like the second time we got kicked out. I mean, it was like really bad. You know, we got really bad with the school. We did a lot of bad things in the school. They couldn't take us anymore. They kicked us, all of us out. And then I ended up going to the CFC, you know, and then at that moment, when I saw the struggle my dad was going to put me in a good school, so I vowed at that moment to never get in trouble again, ever. And ever till today, I completely changed my life to become the positive guy that you guys are seeing right now. So it all started from those moments in Haiti that completely reshaped my character and who I am right now.
That's an interesting story. And well, you said there was three things. So you said two. There's one more missing.
Yes. No. So those two things, like that, I see them as one, because, you know, they are like related to each other.
I got you.
But the second thing that that happened to me was moving to the U.S.
Okay.
So I moved to the U.S. at 21. It was the first time in my life I've ever traveled anywhere outside Haiti.
Wow.
Haiti was the only place I knew. And so it was everything to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I moved here, so I made a decision because I, but at that time, I made the decision to complete. I was already changing my life. So I graduated high school from CFC. So, and I ended up going to Hoedzetelsegon there. So I've done all those good things back in Haiti.
And when you moved to, when you moved to the States, in what city did you move to?
To New York.
New York. Gotcha. Okay.
New York City. So it was the only place that I've been since I moved here.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I didn't speak English, so I had to start from scratch.
Uh-huh.
And so I was actually in the same English class with my dad, learning basic English. You know?
Wow. So you moved here, you moved here to the States with your family?
Yeah, I moved with my dad and my older brother first, and then my mom came 6 months later because we had to prepare for them.
Okay.
Because my uncle, we stayed at my uncle's place,
uh-huh.
and but knew the other people were coming, so we worked really hard to get uh-huh. them. So that's why the second thing that happened to me when I was there, it was because I was able to go to school the next Monday that I got in the country. So the reason why I said is because when most people are from Haiti, when they move here, most of the young people that I actually know, when they come here, the environment that you move in will determine the whether you will be successful in the U.S. or not, you know? And for me, the family that I stayed with at that time, the first thing that they did for me was putting me to school, which set the path for me to follow to this. So they didn't take me to clubs like most people will go
uh-huh.
because they say, you know what, I'm in this country, I'm going to have fun. And they believe in hard work and education. So that's the path they put me on from the beginning, from the day I set foot in the country. And that's what I follow and went with it. And I kind of say I credit them with that, you know, because most people, when they say you come here, you're going to go have fun and party and enjoy uh-huh. all those kind of things. But for me, it was completely different setting. And I credit them for that. And when I got there, so I was in the same school class with my dad. So I worked really hard to study English. And then every 3 months, I would go and ask the teacher and the school principal to take the test to move to the next class. And they will agree to that because they saw my passion, they saw my hunger for learning, and they agreed to push me forward. And I did that. Within a year, I was able to move to all levels of basic English with enough English and writing skills to get me into college. So after 1 year, I applied for community college. I guess accepted. And then from there, 1 month later, after moving to US, I got my first job at Target. Huh. and I was walking by and they were looking for people. And I didn't speak English. I couldn't even, my cousin helped me fill out the application. And I got a call the next day, and then I was doing interviews, and I couldn't understand. They called somebody who spoke Creole to translate for me. You know, just to tell you how God really helped me pave that way, because it's something that's never heard of. Uh-huh. For you to go through an interview, and if you don't understand, they don't give you the job. But I don't know, it was something about me. They liked me. They liked my attitude. They like my happiness, and they gave me the job and put me on register. So I was helping people. So I got the job, and the rest is history. You know, I became one of the most successful employees at Target. I switched to all the positions that they're there. I work on the floor. I push carriage outside. I became a security guard. I worked for Pizza Hut. I worked for Starbucks. Every position you can think of at Target, I work at all of them.
So you could say that you hit every possible target at Target.
Exactly. To the point that if I kept going there, you know, I could have been the store manager one day or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty much a thing. I think like those two key moments was the second moment that really shaped my life in the U.S. when I came here. And they put me on a path where I stay focused on my dream and achieving the American dream, not just enjoying the country and have fun and settle for less. So I think that's one of the most valuable thing, that lesson that I learned from this experience. And then the third thing, that major thing that happened to me, was the earthquake, you know? And that's what will really set the path for me for my professional career for the past couple of years. And, you know, seeing the impact of the earthquake in Haiti as a citizen and someone who truly loved my country, and seeing my former school get destroyed, and I lost some classmates, you know, those events really touched me. And I made a decision to go back to Haiti for the first time since moving to the U.S. Huh. And then, but I didn't have money. I was still a student at NYU on my way to studying dentistry. Uh-huh. And my only goal was I have the knowledge, you know? So I asked a couple of friends for some dental supplies, and then I traveled. I'd make an independent trip to Haiti at a camp near Pétionville, near my brother's house. And at that moment, when I got there, and then my brother announced, "Hey, we're here to help." And back, within 5 minutes, we were flooded with people from the camp. And we lined up, we separated them for children. So we gave them toothbrush, toothpaste. And I did some screening for the kids, you know, and seeing the level of infections, like, you know, from reading from books, things that I would read in books, and I would actually see them in real life in the children's mouth, really was an eye-opener for me. Huh. And that's when I started to think about other ways I could really do more help for the kids, but still do so in the ways that I still use my education to do it, you know, and not waste all the money and time that I spend on my degrees, but still manage to find ways to make that connection between the things, the knowledge that I gain, and my passion to help people. And so that's pretty much like how it started. When I returned back here, and I asked God to really give me a sign in terms of where to go, whether to continue to dental school or to really follow my passion, to my calling, to really help people who are disadvantaged around the world with the dental needs. And so after a while, that's what I decided to do. And I went to Columbia University to get my master's because I needed to learn the skills to manage a nonprofit. And that's what my master's was about. And then from there, when I started the master's program, the organization kind of grew globally. We expanded to other countries because we know it was a global issue. But, you know, for me to be able to take a simple idea from the tragedy of the earthquake into a global movement was really something that I didn't expect to do. But, you know, and it really shows that the major need that are happening around the world and how much people really want to help out. And so that's from then the rest is history. Now we've been in 8 countries across 4 continents. Currently, I'm in Costa Rica, which is the center of Central America, and will give us easy access to Latin America and the Caribbean region. So where we also want to create an impact. And so that's the vision.
Man, Jean-Paul, I'm gonna tell you something. Mm-hmm. You know why I decided to start my podcast?
Right.
Is to specifically get to interview people like you, honestly. Because your story, I know being Haitian myself, I know it will impact me a little bit different because I have, there's a lot of similarities between you and me in terms of the stories that we have. Mm-hmm. But it makes me feel even better knowing that a fellow Haitian had to go through this journey to end up where he's at right now, meaning you and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's fulfilling. It's inspiring. You've already inspired me through that story. And yeah, I had no idea. I think it's beautiful, man. It's just great to hear that journey and what you've gone through taking you to this position now as, you know, the mayor of Smile. And even, you know, from having, I guess, the dream of being like a dentist, and now you're doing much more than that. You're improving the oral hygiene of young kids all over the world, which is super important, obviously. You know, I don't think people understand the importance of it. I don't even understand the importance of it, to be completely honest with you.
That's right. And I think that's a very good important, because myself, if I told you like years ago that's what I wanted to do in my life, I would be completely wrong. But you know, it wasn't my plan. It was just my calling. You know, I would say it right now, because you know, for some people, that's why when people ask me, I want to open an organization, how can I do it? I said, you know, the first thing you need to do to know it's why you want to do it. Because if you want to do it because you see me doing it or other people doing it, or you see all the benefits from it, then you're going to fail because it's not what it looks like. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of setbacks. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, you know? Uh-huh. And a good example is that doing my first trip in Jacmel, on my way back after we did an incredible outreach with the kids at that school, I got into a major car accident where I almost died, you know? And the car flipped with us, and you know, and everything that happened bad. They stole my computer and everything like that. People were coming to help us. So there's a lot of things that will go wrong, but if you know the why you're doing it, then it makes it much more valuable to go through those challenges, because knowing that the end result is not about you, it's about a much bigger purpose. So that's one of the advice I would give to your listeners who are thinking about starting something or an organization or a business. Just start with the why, and everything else will fall into place.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I told you what I just told you, that, you know, one of the reasons why I started this podcast is to interview people like you, not only to get to know them, to get to know their stories, but to inspire not only myself, but my audience, hopefully. And when I said you've inspired me, you actually have inspired me in a very direct way. We'll get to talk about that, hopefully, you and I, but I think there's, you know, I've always said that in my podcast also, and one of the things that I really want to accomplish, aside from, you know, hearing those beautiful stories, is just to have people that do good, people that influence people in a positive way, people that impact their communities in a positive way. I do feel like entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders have this responsibility. I really do. I feel like it comes with the territory. I don't think you get to be an entrepreneur. I don't think you get to be an athlete or a celebrity or an influencer or professional not having the duty actually to impact people positively. Whether it's one person, two people, 10 people, millions of people, it doesn't really matter, but it starts with one person because that's how it works. You pay it forward. And that's why I enjoy those conversations, and I enjoy, you know, listening to stories like these too. So thank you for that, and congratulations, man. You completely deserve it.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Now, that name, Mayor of Smile, who gave it to you?
Well, the Mayor of Smile is a self-proclaimed name.
Okay.
And it's very specific. You know, when you look at the roles of mayors, they have a better understanding or a deeper understanding of the communities they serve, you know? And they are more closer to the people and than any other leaders. So first of all, for me, I see myself as a leader. And also, the town mayors came about because of where I go in those countries, because the places that I travel are places are very deep down in the middle of nowhere, you know, where normal people don't go. And for me, it was important to reach the last miles and go to hard to reach area where people are left behind, you know. And that's where the town mayor small thing came about. And it came about after I visited India, where I went to the deepest place in the mountains at an indigenous communities, and to see the work that we've been doing, connecting people, is just really inspiring. And, you know, it's not something that I would never thought that a young man from Haiti will go to places that I don't even speak the language, I don't know the culture, I don't know the, you know, all those things that happen. But for me to be connected with those people to the universal language of smile, is just inspiring to me, you know. And one thing is, I learned from that is that the kids that I work with in the places that I work with, they all behave the same way, you know. Now that I think about it, so the kids in Haiti, when I go to just visit a school in Haiti, whether it's in Haiti or the Dominican Republic or India, they all behave the same way. It's almost as if they were like the same people, and which they are, you know. And I think it's just like that's where the name is came from. It's just a way to show that deep I connect with the communities in which I work. And also, there's also a story behind that also, which will come out in 2021 with a children's book version, where it will be based in real life stories of all the places that I traveled and connect with people, so that we can turn those stories, inspiring stories, into a children's book for children to enjoy.
Oh man, that's awesome, man. Man, it gets better and better. Man, this is crazy. Man, that's great, man. So let me ask you something else here. Yeah. In your bio, you mentioned that you have devoted your entire professional life to leveraging capitalism and philanthropy. I know it means what it means, but I want, can you elaborate a little bit more about exactly what you mean by saying that?
That's right. I mean, one of the reasons why when I made the choice to build the organization, I wanted to build something different, you know, not like any other organization out there. And for me to do that, to get that, I needed a few things to reach out to the highest level. And that's why sometimes when you in my profiles, you'll see me getting into some of the most powerful places and meeting some of the most powerful people in the world. And the reason why behind that is not to show that I have power or I have connection, but it's truly because I wanted to build public-private partnership to direct attention to people who have been left behind, you know? And the way to do that, you have to build relations with governments and the business sector in order to achieve the kind of result that I want to, and impact that I want to have in the world. And you don't get to do that by simply being a charity leader. You understand?
Huh.
Because, you know, you have to be at the center of all the major talks. So that's why early on, we are one of the only dental organizations affiliated with the United Nations. And when people see that, they wonder why, because I leverage my knowledge, my education and knowledge and all the impact that we do to bring these issues at the forefront of all the major talks, you know, that's happening in the world and in places that have never been done before. And whether it's to the United Nations or to the World Economic Forums, where all the top world business leaders gathers every year. And you wonder why a nonprofit leader would be there. But then again, that's my strategies, you know, because you will never get to achieve the level of impact that I want to achieve by simply asking for donations, and which oftentimes is really difficult to get, especially as a minority leader. It's very challenging. So that's one of the reasons why I stand out in the field, and I get all those awards and other things, not because it's just not because of what it is, but it's because I was able to cross over to areas that never been done before, and actually give me expanding access to and bring that issue to the highest level of leadership around the world.
Man, that's very, very well put. Definitely needed an explanation. I didn't really take it that far. So definitely needed. Right. I'm happy I asked this question. And I'm going to ask you about your education, because obviously that's important to you. You've said it many times throughout this interview. And I noticed that you are currently still in school to be a doctor of education.
That's right. Yes. One other thing that I do. So my dad was a school principal. So at a very
wait. Let me stop you right here. So your dad was a school's principal, and you still managed to get kicked out of school twice.
Yeah, just the irony of it, right?
Maybe it's the reason why you got kicked out twice, because your daddy's a principal.
I mean, it's just like, you know, I got beat up, you know, after the second. I mean, both time I got beat up, but the second beat up was like so bad. That man, I thought I was gonna die.
Well, my hey, listen, you know, to our American audience, this is touchy territory here. They were like, "What?" You know, but they don't understand how important that is. That might be the reason why we're talking about what you're doing today.
Exactly.
You know,
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
After that beat up, I completely changed. But, you mm-hmm. know, from a very young age, when I was in high school, so my dad would bring me on board to the school to supervise exam for young kids. Mm-hmm. So that connection between school, me and school children was always there from the very beginning, huh. You know. And my passion for learning also was, you know, from a very big, even though I was a very turbulent kid when it comes into behavior, but I was also very, very good in terms of grades and doing all those kind of things. So which is why it saved me in a lot of ways, because they saw the value in me and wanted to push me more. But, you know, I just had to work on the behavior side of things, you know, which I ended up working on. So, but yeah, so when I moved here and I was mostly focusing on my education, actually I like, you know, I attended every U.S. higher education schools, from Ivy Leagues to technical college, community college, and private school, private institute. And all the degrees that I have, they are really interconnected in terms of the field and what I'm using them for right now. For instance, my NYU dental, that dental hygiene background, I use that right now for as part of my organization. And my Colombia background is in international relations and management, where I get to use that the policy side of things, which is what brings me into the those high level meetings when we try to get, you know, world leaders to influence policies that will favor bringing oil care as part of the key agenda they have. So that I still use that degree. And well, let us, for my newest adventure as a doctor of education, it's really to see how we're going to take all this into inspiring the next generations that are coming up, to make sure that they get the training that they need to really help us solve and tackle this challenge. So we're going to do Unspoken Smiles Institute, which will be designed to train local women in the as dental, to get more women into the field of dentistry. So that way they can help us solve this challenge. And because one of the things that we realized when we were doing the project, education with the school kids wasn't enough, because many of them still didn't have access to routine care like we have it here. Every, twice a year, you get a call from your doctor and say, hey, you have a dental appointment for today, so you need to come in, or in 6 months. But in many of the places around the world, people will go by years without seeing a dentist. So this school program will train local people to and equip them and pay them to provide basic and routine care within their own communities. You know, and that's the reason why I'm pursuing this degree, not because, you know, it looks good, but it's because it will serve a very specific purpose in the long run.
Yeah, it seems that you have a well-defined plan. So I think every step of your journey seems to be going towards something specific and in achieving your goals. So I'm pretty sure you have big plans with this step, you know, that you're taking here. And man, all I could say, man, is like, we're lucky to have someone like you, man, to represent us as Haitians, and more than that, just, you know, citizens of the world, because you're not only impacting Haitians, you're impacting people all over the world. So that's something great. And it's part of my dream, man. So this is something that I was really not expecting fully in this interview, and I'm very pleased to hear all of that. And for sure, I will definitely keep in touch with you after this interview. But aside from,
thank you. Yeah.
Oh, of course, man, of course. But aside from the obvious here, you do have a great smile. So you do, you know, obviously do your name justice. So all that works out, the dentistry thing, all that, great. Now, leading to your appearance on the Lay's potato chip bags.
Yes.
I'm curious about that. Tell us that story.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, there's another thing about me, you know, as a leader of the organization, there's no one else that could represent it better than me. And what I wanted to use, when I also like to see myself as a cause artist, which means that it's someone who uses his skills, his or her skills, personal skills, to do good in the world, you know, to go towards something positive. So, I mean, you have done it. I consider you as a cause artist, because as a singer, you know, you created a song for Project Centan, you know, can't be that, you know. And thank I you, purchased yeah. that song like on iTunes.
Thank you, man. Just came out. Appreciate it.
So, yeah. And so those are the kind of things. And I'm also a ballroom dancer. So,
whoa.
Yeah, so all those kind of things that I think personally that I could use to do good in the world, I definitely use them to my advantage, whether it's my smile or my talents and my look, you know, and anything that I can, that's pretty much it. And that's what brings me to the Lay's package, because first of all, someone that admiring me for it because they said, I love your smile and what you're doing with your organization. And that's why it takes a village really to get to where you want to go. And I'm grateful for those people. So they nominated me, and even those people, they loved that idea. And they was like, man, we want to have you there. And so it's been like a 7 to 8 month project where you have to keep silent and not talk about it. You have to fill out a lot of paperwork. And then to have that, you know, that symbol of smiles in representing in stores nationwide was something like really inspiring for me this year. You know, it was also the highlight of, my career for the past couple years, I would say. And it's just the beginning, you know, so because this was just a national stage. And then the next project we're going to be working on could be something that would take us to the international stage, you know, like either in partnership with Unilever or the big names. So I think that one was like a first step towards what we can do when you use your personal skills, look, or anything as a marketing way to create, you know, to create good towards what you want to achieve. So this is just the beginning, you know, there's more coming. As you know, I just put out a song online as Unspoken Smile. So we're putting a happiness album together.
Nice.
We're bringing other artists. So it's some great things that we're going to be doing out there, all in the names of doing good, with staying the focus on one goal to bring more happiness to people around the world who have been left behind.
Wow. So I'm happy that this is just the beginning, to be frank with you, because it seems and it's sounding like, and it definitely feels like there's a lot more. And that's what's so exciting about your story and about what you're doing. It feels like you're super passionate about it. It feels like you have dedicated your life to it and continuing to do that. So that's awesome, man. And I'm definitely looking forward to what you do next. And for us listening right now, this being one of the highlights of your career, like you just mentioned, and also saying that this is just the beginning, what is the ultimate for you? Where do you see yourself in 5, 10, 15 years from now with the evolution that you've experienced so far? Is there a top of a mountain for you, or is just, you know, wherever it takes you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, every achievement, you know, there's always like the Haitian proverbs that say, day mon game mon. But each milestone that you achieve, there's always another milestone waiting behind it. You know, and I am in a field that constantly has to require new knowledge, new insights. And it's always going to be a learning process. It's always going to be the next milestone to achieve. But over the next couple of years, I think one of the major goals that I want to achieve by 2030 is to really ensure that every schools, you know, that we have in the planet are cavity-free, you know, to our programs. So it's a big challenge, and that's why it will take efforts from governments, businesses, and us putting resources together to really achieve that. And it's doable. It's something that's 100% preventable. It's very cost-effective. And I believe that with the proper resources and support, we can achieve that goal by 2030. So we have like now 9 more years to achieve that. And we're going to push forward until we get that. So that would be the first thing that I want to accomplish in 10 years. Then following that, I would, you know, probably will take a step back in the leadership role and then pass it on to other younger generations to continue the projects. Because as we start growing, populations will continue to grow around the world, and so will the need to to take care of more teeth. So I think this is something that will exist forever. And setting up the stage for other people to take leadership in this. And that's why we set up leaders from other countries to gain more knowledge and skills in the field. So that way they can take over the projects, you know, once I take a step back and pass it on to them.
Amazing. Amazing, man. Definitely looking forward to that. And like you said, you know, if in 10 years, 2030, you know, every school on the planet to be cavity free, it's super challenging. And but it's an amazing goal, man. It's definitely doable. And I'll be supporting you the best I can. And I hope that, you know, everybody listening right now also could also offer their support. And speaking of that, what is the best way for anybody listening right now to support your organization, to support your mission, your passion, and helping those kids all together?
Thank you. And so one of the two things that we need like three major things, you know. The first thing is human capital. There's a lot of people in with talents, you know, with knowledge and resources. Uh-huh. And I'm always in the learning mode. I've never claimed to know it all. Uh-huh. And if there's a way that people can help to accelerate or impact and make it faster, so work on any ideas or people who have resources and skills that they can help us build things, whether it's the technology and other things that they can help us to build a better presence online. So human capital is a huge part of what we want to do. And in fact, has always been made it successful because in the project, the reason why I'm able to accomplish all my personal goal, aside from my professional work, is because I give 1% of myself within the organization and use 99% of other people's, you know? So that way I get the freedom to do the things that I have to do on a personal level, but still get in to bring people into the idea so that they can feel like they contribute to something anytime they see a kid go by either having a toothbrush or being cavity-free for an entire year. So it's an achievement that they can also claim. So human capital, having people with the knowledge who can help us grow, or welcome that. The second thing we need will be resources, you know. Some of the key things that we need that is like a key part to our programs is also toothbrush or hygiene kits, you know, because tell the kids how to brush is not enough. We need to give them the resources. So that's why, in our program, we try our best to give each kid 4 toothbrushes that will last them for the entire year so that they don't have to worry about it at all. So every 3 months, they will change the toothbrush, and then we repeat that to them. So when we collect those supplies, we don't just, you know, give one to have the numbers. We give 4 toothbrushes per kid so that way they have supplies that can last them for the entire year. And yeah, and the last thing is funding. You know, funding, for the past couple of years, I try my best to get the most we can get for the organization without the need to ask people for more money, simply because so of what it represents when you collect money from people. You are a target. And for me as Asian, you know, there's really a big target on our backs. Uh-huh. In terms of people not trusting us when it comes to handling money and any other things. So for me, I wanted to really be prepared for that and get ready to make sure that I don't make any mistakes and I also have all the things, because one mistake that I can make could destroy my reputation and anything that I've built for the past couple of years. And so I delayed raising funding, so only raise money from us for donation for a very specific project for a very specific reason until we have the capacity to raise larger funds, which we are now able to. But my goal all the time was always to be, to create other avenues to create a stable source of funding that will make our organization less dependent on free donations and all those kind of things that could really put a target on my back, you know, as a Haitian citizen. And I hate to say this, it's really sad, but, you know, as a minority and Black and Haitian, there's really a big issue when it comes into giving us funding for programs. And so that, for me, it's important for me to work hard to prove them wrong and also to earn their trust. And it takes time, you know, to build trust. And I'm taking my time to build that trust. And when the time is right to raise a large sum of funding, we will make it happen. But as of now, I managed to get the most we can get without having to spend a lot of money through the partnerships that we'll build with key organizations, whether it's the American Dental Associations, who provides to us all the supplies that we need for each of those projects, or a partnership with Quick Toothbrush, Colgate. They give us all the supplies we need. And when we raise funding, we use that funding for travel and fees and other things that we need for maintenance of website and other things, marketing, so Facebook ads, and all those things that we can use to do the minimum of the money. But we have now built a very good track records with valuable data and impact that will put us in a way that could build trust, but it's up to the people. It's not to me at the moment. I've done my work and can only present it there and see where it can take.
Well, Jean-Paul, I mean, again, I know I've said it many times, but I want to thank you for all the wonderful, amazing work that you've done and that you keep on doing and that you will continue to do. I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the Getting Social podcast. I feel like there's a lot more we can talk about for sure, but I do respect your time, obviously, and I will definitely be in touch with you, that's for sure, and hopefully have you again, you know, in 2021, just to see the progress of how everything is unfolding.
Yes, I would love to be back again.
Oh, for sure. That's a promise, man, because I'm going to follow you even closer and hopefully help as much as you can. I know you spoke about how the many ways you could help, you know, human capital being one of them. So you definitely hear from me, that's for sure. And in terms of website and reaching you, people can look at your website and see what you're about at shop.unspokensmiles.org. Is that the best place to visit you?
So the shop is like the shop version of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the main website for the foundation is unspokensmiles.org. Unspokensmiles.org, everywhere that you go, LinkedIn, mm-hmm. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. That's where we have. We have built a strong presence there. Thanks to a Google Grants ad partnership, uh-huh. It gives us more exposure. And so that's it, you know. And if someone needs to reach out to me at Mayor of Smiles and Jean-Paul Laurent, everywhere on social media, I have a strong social media presence as well.
Very well, man. Thank you again. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful week and happy holidays to you and your wonderful family. And please say hello to your dad. We need more songs, please.
I will do that, man. Happy holidays to you and everyone also involved. And thanks again. And we'll talk soon. And I will let him know that.
Okay.
All right. Man.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Social podcast. If you've made it that far, it means you probably liked it. In that case, leave us a review, subscribe, and please share it with a friend.